these hearings today. The other thing I will tell you is the podium can be raised and lowered to meet your needs, and there is a button in the middle of the front. So with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Kelly. I'm appearing as counsel for appellant Jeremy Giefer. Appellant Giefer contends that the circumstantial evidence produced at trial was insufficient to establish that his limited contact over the clothing during a brief incident of horseplay wrestling with a 13-year-old family friend was done with sexual or aggressive intent. As noted by the district court, Mr. Giefer's brief contact was limited to basically a touch of the clothing over the breast and a touch of the buttocks.
Counsel, can I just clarify the elements? Maybe your intro there just touched on it. Your brief refers to also the element of an intentional touching as well as the element of sexual or aggressive intent, but you're not arguing that any touching was accidental or non-volitional. Is that correct? The only element you're challenging is the mens rea.
The district, to answer the court's question, yes, because the district court made a finding of fact regarding the intentional nature of the contact. And the district court, I would submit, debated and struggled in the findings of fact with whether or not there was proof beyond reasonable doubt that the contact had sexual or aggressive intent. Now, this court is to review the sufficiency of the state's circumstantial evidence regarding my client's intent de novo. And in doing so, this court should thoroughly review the record to determine whether evidence establishes guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, what I'll tell the court is that I've heard that described as painstaking by the Court of Appeals. You have to basically go back through the record to determine as a whole what inferences can be drawn to establish the intent of an actor without deference to the district court's determinations as to that intent.
Can I just push you on that a little bit? Do you agree, though, that we do defer to the circumstances proved as found by the finder of fact, which in this case was the court?
Correct, but not to the determination by the district court regarding the conclusion to be drawn with regard to the sexual intent, that being a process of the mind.
Well, that points to the circumstantial nature of the evidence, right?
Correct.
So aren't we supposed to follow the two-stepped review process for cases involving circumstantial evidence?
That's correct. And I'm citing El Nassar that the court needs to determine whether or not there's a complete chain that, in view of the evidence as a whole, leads directly to the guilt of the defendant as to exclude any reasonable inference other than guilt, while giving no deference to the fact finder's choice between reasonable inferences. That's the language I'm trying to rely my argument upon.
And so what are the circumstances proved that we should tether our analysis of what inferences are reasonable to?
So first, I would juxtapose this fact pattern against other case law where the contact was much more extended, was under the clothing, other cases where this issue of intent has been discussed, and that's State v. Austin, State v. Vick. Those are cited in my brief. But to answer the court's question, I would refer the court to Volume 1 of the trial transcript. This is the testimony of the complainant on pages 10 through 79. Now, contrary to the assertions that I gleaned from the respondent's brief, after the alleged assault by my client, JG and the complainant did not stay in JG's bedroom. According to the testimony of the complainant, pages 32, 33, line 21, they went downstairs, picked up towels and wash, got a Jell-O cup, got a Freezy. On page 33, they ate pizza and Chinese and took bathroom breaks and texted my client, all before going into the bedroom.
Counsel, let me, if I could, direct you to the facts. I think the circumstances proved as I see them. So your client went into the bedroom where the 13-year-old complainant was, closed the door, grabbed her breast over the clothes, pushed her down, rolled her over, straddled her, then later sent suggestive texts, and then later deleted some texts. How do those circumstances prove not rule out any rational inference of innocence as to his intent?
The district court's findings of fact, which is appellant's appendix one, has contrary findings of fact that we're all agreeing that the trier of fact, the district court, this was a court trial, not a jury trial.
Right, but we apply the same circumstances proved analysis, do we not, when we have a court trial versus a jury trial?
Correct. But I guess I'm responding to the question of the court regarding that summary, right, of all these circumstances proved. And I would submit to the court that in that findings of fact, there are, the district court judge found that there were two touches over the clothing. One was during a push. One was when he had spun her around. And then there's this colloquy in his findings of fact about, well, that doesn't sound like horseplay to me. So he's stepping into the mind of the actor and drawing a conclusion about the sexual intent from his understanding of whether or not this could be horseplay.
Is that now, a reasonable inference? Would you agree?
That there's no possible, correct, but is there any other reasonable inference? That's the question, right? So for this court. Now, also in the testimony of the complainant, which, once again, uncontradicted, but not in the findings of fact. Mentioned the Madison trip. The judge seems to give some credit to this trip down to Madison when there's a walks into the bathroom. The complainant indicates on cross that there's a lock on the bathroom door that could have prevented people from walking in, and no claim that my client somehow jimmied that door. So they're there for a week. And she says he walks in on several occasions, and the court really does not address ever the undisputed testimony of the complainant. It's actually corroborated by one other trial witness that there is a lock on that door. But let's go back to the interaction regarding the wrestling move. Also in the testimony of the complainant, there is, I apologize. At page 29, it was a touch of the buttocks. Didn't smack it or anything, it was a touch. Also, in that testimony, the complainant clearly indicates that the text messages were to go to bed, be quiet. There was a stop in the text messages. Her phone was given to JG, and JG started texting the appellant 16 minutes after all texts had stopped. The appellant then texts complainant's phone indicating this is JG. And then there's a denial. And then it's, well, come out, then meet. Because he knows he's texting JG. Now that Once again, the district court.
As I understand it, later in the text messaging, it may well have been daughter doing the texting, but the complainant victim said, no, daughter's gone to sleep, and there was continual texting after that.
What he said was, then come out, because he doesn't believe him. He knows he's getting played. But this is, once again, these are teenagers. They're not going to bed. It's 2 a.m. The record reflects he's got to work in the morning. The other thing that the testimony of the complainant establishes that's never addressed by the findings of fact and not discounted by any other person, this is on page 58, that the complainant and JG regularly play fight and wrestle and tickle and slap and punch. That within this dynamic of the complainant spending time with my client and his family, this is not out of the ordinary. So what you've, this is, these are all the circumstances surrounding this incident, which, by the way, the record establishes occurred just a few feet away from JG. This is not a secretive location, even though the door was closed when he walked in, according to the testimony.
Well, he closed it after entering the room in which the complainant was alone.
That was the finding of fact, but there's no dispute.
Well, there's evidence that supports that as well, right?
The testimony, not physical evidence, but testimony, certainly. And that was the conclusion of the court. I'm stuck with that. But also, the JG is, according to the testimony, just down the stairwell. This isn't somewhere. And so the complainant says that my client is laughing. It's playful. JG is just down the stairs. So the complainant's yelling out, and JG runs up the stairs and comes in.
You know, counsel,
so
I
the think question is that possible? I'm sorry.
I hear that you're, you know, wanting to focus on aspects of the testimony and the evidence that maybe didn't make it into the court's findings. Our job as a reviewing court is to look at all of the circumstances proved in their entirety and then decide whether there's a reasonable inference of innocence. So rather than focus on individual pieces of evidence, if you look at all of the circumstances proved in their entirety, which was sort of the thrust of my earlier question, how do those circumstances support any reasonable inference that he did not have a sexual or aggressive intent?
Because individuals can have contact with each other over the clothing on the buttocks or the breast area without that contact being sexual or aggressive. And it happens frequently. Even the district court order acknowledged that there can be contact that's not sexual or aggressive. Is it inappropriate? Is it upsetting? Is it poor choice? You know, but does that mean it's criminal? We're approaching a very, this is a dangerous fact pattern to charge out criminally and convict someone on, I would submit. There are two possible reasonable inferences here. One is that my client wanted to be part of that crew, playful, wrestling. The pushdown, when it's described, there's a finding that he intentionally made contact when he pushed her down. You push somebody down over the clothing. It's not even, pushing somebody down is not close to sexual.
Well,
and then he twisted her over.
It can be, depending on the actor's intent, can't it? I mean, the offense does criminalize touching of an intimate part over clothing if done with a sexual or aggressive intent.
And this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court has normally looked to the circumstances of how long are we talking about? Is this a rubbing that's going on for several minutes?
That's not in the statute, is it? I mean, no, every case turns on circumstances, and this turns on circumstances which Judge Bond outlined as some of the circumstances proved in the case. And I think in follow-up to Judge Bond's question, I'm still waiting to hear what specific circumstance proved or circumstances proved support a reasonable inference of innocence.
That horseplay like this had occurred on a regular basis within that dynamic of the three. That my client was laughing at the time and that JG was a few feet away from him during the incident, close by. Those would be the circumstances. And also the statement that he gives to law enforcement, there's a full explanation of the deletion of the text messages. It's in his statement. It was in evidence of Exhibit 136 in the trial.
All right. Counsel, I see your time has expired, but you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Peter Magnuson. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the respondent, state of Minnesota, in this matter. This is a frustrating case to deal with because I'm fighting with ghosts. Appellant is extremely reluctant to identify what the circumstances proved are. He has to do that. But he doesn't want to do it because then I can attack them and point out that those aren't circumstances proved. And then he has to identify what the inference is that can be drawn, reasonably drawn. There's two possible inferences that would result in not guilty here. I never touched the victim at all, or I touched her, but it was roughhousing. Finally, at the end, appellant seems to indicate that he's going with that this was playful. But as I point out in my brief on page 7, he repeatedly, during his statement, he repeatedly denies that he ever touched them. So if we're looking at his own evidence, and he never testified, his own statement is he repeatedly denied it. I profanely denied that he ever touched those kids. Now he wants you to believe that it was reasonable to find that it was playful touching as part of roughhousing.
Counsel, how would you respond to your opponent's last answer, which summarized the circumstances proved that in his view support an inference of innocence, which is that the horseplay had occurred before, appellant was laughing, JG was close by. Do those circumstances support an inference of innocence that it was just horseplay without the sexual or aggressive intent?
Well, I thank you for that question because that was one of the things that I had written down here to note. Horseplay happened between the three. I don't recall there's any testimony in the record that shows there was horseplay between the three. There is testimony about horseplay between the victim and appellant's daughter, but I don't believe there's any physical roughhousing between the three. I could be wrong about that, but again, this is the first time hearing of it, so I'm at a bit of a loss trying to remember everything that was in the testimony that was in the record. But if that is, I think appellant should be able to come up with a pin site to support that then. But to the extent that it supports his version of it, where exactly is that inference that this was roughhousing? I've never put myself in a situation where I've been alone in a bedroom with a 13-year-old girl. The statement, well, this kind of stuff happens all the time. It doesn't. I don't think it does happen all the time. And if the first initial, let's say there was an initial inadvertent touch of the breast, I'm reminded we watch The Holiday every year, and there's a line in there about a boob graze, and immediately the male character, oh, that was an accident, and they joke about it. So if that happened here, why didn't he stop and go, oh man, I'm sorry? Why wouldn't you stop? Why would you continue on and then slap her buttocks or touch her buttocks? This isn't a reasonable inference. And the district court, yes, the district court goes on and makes several fact findings, but at the end of the day, the district court's findings couldn't be more clear.
The district court makes a number of findings with respect to the time the appellant spent with the complainant, including a number of findings with respect to the Wisconsin Dells trip. Are those findings part of the circumstances proved? Help me to understand how they factor in, if at all.
I don't necessarily think they factor in at all. I didn't include those as part of my circumstances proved. It's kind of tangential. I certainly think that it you could factor it in as supporting the state's case, but I don't see it as evidence that would support an alternative reasonable inference. At the district court, and I'm looking at addendum 1-7 and addendum 1-8, and this is in the middle, the second full paragraph. In the above discussion of the acts being, quote, intentional, close quote, the court can infer the defendant purposely touched the clothing over the immediate area of GZ's intimate parts. And then the beginning of the last full paragraph. The court also views other evidence as providing further circumstantial proof as to the contact having a sexual intent. This includes the context of the text messages sent by defendant following the touching and defendant's subsequent deletion of those messages. And then finally on the next page over, in summary, the court finds the evidence and the surrounding circumstances show beyond a reasonable doubt that Giefer engaged in the sexual contact with GZ with sexual or aggressive intent. Those findings are amply supported by the record. And they lead, as I think the questions from this panel have indicated, they lead to only one reasonable inference that the contact was done with sexual intent. If there are other questions, I'll be happy to answer them, but I think I'm just going to start repeating my brief at this point.
Assume the appellant's argument that this was horseplay. Does that negate sexual intent? Are they exclusive?
Yes, they are. They are exclusive. And it can't. The evidence supporting it cannot be part of the circumstances proved. As I quote from State v. Davenport, evidence that's inconsistent, and this is from page 266 on State v. Davenport, 947 Northwest 2nd, 251. We begin by determining the circumstances proved, rejecting any evidence conflicting with the jury's verdict. And then on the next page, the court talks about, on 267, stated another way, Davenport's argument that he lacked intent is based on facts that are not part of the circumstances proved in this case. Therefore, the state presented sufficient evidence. So yes, appellant is asking you to look at this evidence. Well, there was evidence of roughhousing. And ask you to step into the shoes of the jury and just reweigh the evidence. That's not your role here on appeal here. You have a very limited role, and deference is afforded to the district court's findings here.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Kelly, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I would cite this court to the district court's findings of fact and acknowledge that those findings, there's deference to those findings. The court reviews de novo the analysis under El Nassar Silvernail. That is where our appeal is focused, because the court finds that page 7 of Appendix 1 of appellant's brief, that the intent of my client could not be established through direct evidence, as is typical. Now, the paragraph that I'd like to refer the court to is on page 7, assuming once again that we're going to accept the district court's findings of fact. Those are that time-wise, the touching over the complainant's breast and buttocks area was momentary, not prolonged, that there's a analysis then that by moving or twisting the torso of the complainant to further make contact with the buttocks area is a strong inference that my client had sexual or aggressive intent. Then he goes on to talk about not uncommon for in sports for athletes to slap another athlete on the butt. These circumstances show the intent here was of a sexual nature. That's where the court goes past the fact-finding of the circumstances and gets into the intent of my client. And that's what this court does not have to accept. That's what this court can review de novo. Now,
counsel, would you characterize the district court's findings? Did the court make a finding that this was not horseplay or roughhousing? Is that a finding by the district court?
Yes, I believe it is. Once again, that it was, the contact was done within sexual intent. I don't know that, once again, that I think that that question requires a conclusion about the intent of my client. Should say that the answer you have to, in order to answer that question, you have to get to the intent of my client. Horseplay versus a sexual assault. And I think that everyone can agree that this is on that borderline, given the brevity found by the district court, right? In terms of the time involved and the type of contact involved and the circumstances involved. That this is not clearly, the circumstances don't lead to only one reasonable inference. There is a second reasonable inference, and that's why the conviction on count one should be reversed. One more item I want to reference to the court. The defendant, while he didn't testify, did introduce exhibits. And one of those was the the full extraction of his cell phone. That's in Mindy's, it's Exhibit 136. That extraction showed that any text messages sent to individuals that are not in his contacts list are deleted. So there are numerous text messages about this evening to his daughter and back. And there's a conversation about that we introduced. But that because the complainant was not in his contacts list, he said he deleted those messages. The other thing, when he provides that statement, he's being told that we're investigating a sexual assault. And did you go into the room of the girls after they went to bed? And he said, I didn't go in that room. So the question is less than clear. He's being asked about, after they went to bed, did you go in the room? He said, no. Well, was there any, being asked, was there any sexual contact? No, I never touched those girls, They didn't ask him, were you involved in horseplay prior to them making the pizza, cleaning up the towels, eating Chinese and getting the freezy and everything else that went on that night after this incident of horseplay.
All right, counsel, your time has expired. If you want to sum up in a sentence, I would let you do that.
Thank you. I appreciate the court's time.
All right, thank you. Thank you both for your arguments. We appreciate them. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period.